This day we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 10 to 11, chapter 15, entitled Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections and text 29. Agni Adibina Hanyeta. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Agni Adi Bina Hanyeta. Agni Adi Bina Hanyeta.
Agni Adi Bina Hanyeta.
Mune Yoga Mayam Vapu.
Mune Yoga Mayam Vapu.
Mune Yoga Mayam Vapu.
Mune Yoga Mayam
Vapu. Man Yoga Shanta Chitasya. Madhyoga Shanta Chitasya. Yada Shamu Udakam Yata. Yada Shamu Udakam Yata. Agni Adivina Hanyeta.
Agni Adivina
Hanyeta. Mune Yoga Mayam Vapu. Madhyoga Shanta Chitasya. Yada Samurakam Yata. Agni. By fire. Adibhi. And so on. Sun, water, poison, etc. Na. Not. Hanyata can be injured. Mune of a wise yogi. Yoga Mayam, fully cultivated in yoga practice, in yoga science, sorry. Fully cultivated in yoga science. Vapu, the body. Mat Yoga, by devotional connection with me. Shanta, pacified. Chitasya, whose consciousness. Yadasam, of the aquatics. Udakam, water. Yata, just as. Translation by the divine servants of his divine grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Just as the bodies of aquatics cannot be injured by water, similarly the body of a yogi whose consciousness is pacified by devotion to me and who is fully developed in yoga science cannot be injured by fire, sun, water, poison, and so forth. Repeat the translation. Just as the body of aquatics cannot be injured by water, similarly the body of a yogi whose consciousness is pacified by devotion to me and who is fully developed in yoga science cannot be injured by fire, sun, water, poison, and so forth. Purport. The creatures dwelling in the ocean are never injured by water. Rather, they enjoy life within the watery medium. Similarly, for one skilled in the techniques of yoga, fending off attacks by weapons, fire, poison, and so on is a recreational activity. Prahlad Maharaj was attacked by his father in all these ways, but because of his perfect Krishna consciousness, he was not injured. The pure devotees of the Lord depend fully on the mercy of Lord Krishna, who possesses mystic opulences to an infinite degree, and is therefore known as Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic power. Because devotees are always connected to Lord Krishna, They do not feel any need to separately develop powers already possessed unlimitedly by their Lord, Master and Protector. If a human being falls into the middle of the ocean, he quickly drowns, whereas the fish enjoy happiness sporting in the same waves. Similarly, the conditioned souls have fallen into the ocean of material existence and are drowning in the reactions to their sinful activities, whereas the devotees recognize this world to be the potency of the Lord and enjoy pleasurable pastimes within it by fully engaging in the loving service of Lord Krishna. Om Gyanatana Vasya Gyanamjana Salakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovisam Stapitam Yena Utale Swayam Yipa Kadamayam Tadati Shantaram Vancha Kalpatru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Gayevacha Patitanam Pavnirbhya Vaishnavibhya Namo Namaha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in this text of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna has already finished explaining the 8 primary and 10 secondary mystic perfections, how these ultimately lead to one to enjoying in higher planets on a gross level or on a subtle level, basically enjoying the manipulation of the modes of material nature, which is what mystic perfections do. One is able to, with the power of their mind, with the power of the purified mind, they're able to manipulate the different elements, gross to subtle, of material nature. But we understand that these, of course, do not lead one to the real perfection of life, and that is realizing our constitutional position as servants of Krishna. So Krishna in detail in the previous, well, not in detail, but in this chapter he's gone into detail about these mystic yoga perfections, and prior to that he was explaining the yoga system in which he touches on these different points. So here, the first understanding that we're given of the nature of the living entity is done by giving this example of the aquatics. Basically, living entities that have assumed bodies that reside in water. So it's natural for them to feel free and happy and satisfied within that watery medium. Similarly, for one who is practicing devotional service or for one who is on the path of devotional service, you know, one is put in the natural position to be a servant of Krishna. So it's nothing new for the living entity to be actually practicing devotional service. It's our eternal position. But due to the influence of the modes of material nature, when one forgets that attribute of the self, one starts suffering in the ocean of misery, and one drowns themselves in the modes of material nature. So here, more or less, the translation, the purport, are speaking about the body of a yogi whose consciousness is pacified by devotion to him, to Krishna. So of course, we understand that here the yogi, the true yogi here, as the example is given of Prahlad Maharaj, it's speaking about a pure devotee, how when one actually surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord, one understands his eternal position, and one understands that they're meant to serve Krishna. And similarly, Krishna reciprocates with that purified consciousness. Krishna reciprocates with the devotee's sincere endeavors, and in that way Krishna gives the knowledge by which the living entity can gradually come back to him. So we understand that Krishna, as we practice one birth after the other, Krishna gives us more opportunity, gives us more engagements for us to be able to surrender unto him. In Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Krishna tells us how troublesome actually and how rare it is for us to be practicing devotional service. And Krishna says, Bhavanam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva savam iti sa mahatma sadulabha. So Krishna is saying that after many, many births and death, when one actually has knowledge about the surrendering process towards Krishna, one gets to know Krishna, and ultimately one surrenders unto Krishna. And Krishna is explaining that such personalities, such living entities, of course, are very rare within the universes. So the material universe, of course, is only a quarter of the creation on the vast ocean of the universal systems. So attaining this position of coming to practice devotional service or coming to reawaken our pure consciousness happens by the mercy of the Lord, of course, in this process of devotional service. And Krishna also says that after we actually attain this pure consciousness, after we situate ourselves on a transcendental platform above the modes of material nature, then we actually get the result of going back to his abode, surpassing all other attempts towards gaining mystic perfection or gaining any kind of opulence that is supplied within the different higher planetary systems. So one who actually is within that consciousness of understanding that Krishna is all that is in creation, understanding that Krishna is the cause, Krishna is the maintainer, Krishna is an annihilator, and that it's Krishna to whom we should be offering our sacrifices and our activities to, one actually surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord. One comes to that point of giving up the false ego, of giving up the gross and subtle aspects of the self, which are of course produced by, you know, the mind coming into contact with the modes of material nature. So I was thinking, I was reading yesterday in the section I'm reading now in the Bhagavatam is the 10th canto. In there, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada are given the commentary from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And I thought it was such a beautiful meditation and a nice way of understanding how taking shelter of Krishna actually relieves us of all the stresses and can give us even more opulences than having to try and practice and attain these mystic perfections lifetime after lifetime. So I'll just get the text here. So the section that we're going to read, it's a string of verses basically where Sukadeva Goswami, the chapter of course is Krishna and the gopis meeting. So this is after Krishna has played his melodious flute dead of night, and he's attracted the gopis to actually come to the Vrindavan forest and enjoy pleasure pastimes with him. So here after Krishna leaves the association of the gopis, they go searching for him in the forest. And with that, they trace Krishna first by seeing his footprints all over the earth. And basically, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur starts explaining the different markings on Krishna's lotus feet and what they mean. Because oftentimes, you know, we're surrendering at the lotus feet of Krishna. But what does that actually mean in practicality and in reality? So I'll just read the Sanskrit as well and the translation. And this will give us an understanding of the importance of actually surrendering unto the lotus feet of Krishna, and how when we do that, we don't become influenced by these inferior elements that are mentioned in the translation. We don't become influenced by fire, by water, by different elements. And as the perfect example of Prahlad Maharaj given, how he couldn't be killed by any of those opposing elements because he was situated on Krishna's lotus feet, yet taking shelter of Krishna. So that automatically brings one above the modes of material nature. So I'll just read and this is a quote from the Skanda Purana. So the translation is, the gopi said the marks of a flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant, goat, barley corn and so forth on these footprints clearly distinguish them as belonging to the great soul, the son of Nanda Maharaj. In the following verses, the Skanda Purana states the particular places on his feet where Krishna carries the mark of the flag and also other marks and the reasons for these marks. Okay. At the base of the large toe, on his right foot, the unborn Lord carries the mark of a disc, which cuts down the six mental enemies of the devotees. At the bottom of the middle toe of that same foot, Lord Achyuta has a lotus flower, which increases the greed for him in the minds of the bee-like devotees who meditate on his feet. So it's not only, you know, Krishna has these markings on his feet and it sounds nice, you know, he has an elephant goat or he has a lotus, but actually when we perform that activity of wanting to give our life up to Krishna, this is what happens. These are the benedictions, these are the opulences and the perfections that Krishna will supply to his loving devotees, that we cut down the six mental enemies of the mind. And those, of course, as we know, even with the birth of Lord Krishna, how the first six sons had to be killed, which show that these, you know, the lust, anger, envy, greed, pride and illusion, they have to be removed in order for us to surrender or to approach the lotus feet of the Lord. So these are all benedictions that are given to the devotee. And when one actually performs these acts, they are not only removed from a superficial level, but the root cause of all of them is removed. So we can be perfecting, we can be practicing different systems of yoga, you know, Ashtanga, Kundalini, whatever. And on the surface, we can externally remove these enemies of the mind, or we can nullify them, or we can put them aside for a while, but they're not removed from the root cause. Whereas the process of devotional service, the process of bhakti, is the only process that will actually annihilate all these different qualities because of that element of having Krishna reciprocate with the endeavor. Whereas with other processes, you know, when you're aspiring for Brahman, Krishna can't reciprocate with that because there is no reciprocation. So by surrendering to the lotus feet, we get to kill these six mental enemies and we get to become more greedy. We get to aspire more for serving the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is so far the first two markings on Krishna that have been explained and why it's important for us to understand so that we may know why we actually aspire to serve Krishna. At the base of his small toe is a thunderbolt which smashes the mountains of his devotees' reactions to past sins. And in the middle of his heel is the mark of an elephant goad, which brings the elephants of his devotees' mind under control. So not only are we getting rid of, you know, the negative aspects, but we're also attracting Krishna at the same time. So it's not about nullifying this, and it's not a, you know, the focus is not to, you know, follow the rules and regulations and like, don't do this, don't do that. Our focus should be to love Krishna. So all that will happen simultaneously, and this is why Krishna is showing us, okay, I will destroy these different enemies, but at the same time, I'm going to increase your greed for me, which will make those material qualities inactive. So Krishna activates the spontaneous love that we had for him in a gradual way. And in that way, he brings the minds of his devotees under control, which is the sign of the elephant goad. And lastly, the joint of his right large toe bears the mark of a barley corn representing all kinds of enjoyable opulences.
Sorry.
The joint of his right large toe bears the mark of a barley corn representing all kinds of enjoyable opulences. So comparing to these 8 primary and 10 secondary mystic perfections, which don't elevate us to Golok, or in very special conditions. Some, Srila Prabhupada has explained that some living entities who do merge into the Brahman, they can get promoted to Goloka. But in general, these 8 primary and these secondary mystic perfections really are just like a drop of water in the desert, as been explained in the previous text. So these are not aspired for by pure devotees, especially not devotees like Prahlad Maharaj or Bhishma Dev. But these are the examples of the devotees that have been given in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, which show us just the potency of surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Lord. So all these attributes that have been given, all these opulences that the devotee gets by surrendering unto the lotus feet, they're all on the absolute platform. They're not tinged, or they can't at all be tainted by any of the modes of material nature, because Krishna is nirguna. He cannot be touched by the modes of material nature at all under any circumstance. So we do know the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj, how he was given different elements, material elements, to try and annihilate his existence. But of course, you know, the body of a devotee, when one surrenders to Krishna, the body of a devotee becomes protected by the Lord himself, by the Lord's yoga maya potency. So the Mahamaya potency, although seemingly being in this material world, does not act upon the devotee so much. And I'll just read a certain explanation that's given in the 10th canto as well about the body of a devotee and how that the body of a devotee transcends the modes of material nature and becomes completely spiritual. So I'll just use this example once again. I'll just stick to this example of Krishna meeting the gopis in the forest. So basically this example, I'm giving it because while I was reading the translation about how the body of a true yogi, the transcendental, the pure devotee of the Lord, you know, cannot be infringed upon by the modes of material nature, because Krishna is protecting that devotee with his internal potency. So just to get the understanding, so the gopis, when Uddhava was bringing the message, of course, from Krishna, the gopis that he met in seclusion, it's explained how these were the gopis that were not able to join Krishna in the Rasa Lila. And this example, this situation was because they still had some affinity or some attachment to family, children, etc., all these things. And therefore it explained how, because they couldn't go and meet Krishna, they gave up their material bodies. And it was interesting because then it explained that they didn't give up the bodies in the sense that they died, they just dropped dead and there was a funeral for them and the whole thing. It's explained that the way in which they give up the material body, they gave up their body without dying. Because what would happen, they couldn't go to the Rasa Lila, so they sat there in meditation and they meditated on Krishna. And Krishna simultaneously kept them aside from the Rasa Lila and increased the heat of devotion to be able to have his darshan very soon. And then eventually, by constant meditation, by constant remembrance, by this constant, you know, meditation on Krishna, eventually they would attain Krishna in his next pastimes. So they gave up the material bodies, meaning they gave up their material desires towards, you know, the extension of the material desires towards the wife, you know, towards the husband or the community, different attributes like that. So they gave up any form of attachment at all, and they just focused solely on serving Krishna. And in that way, that is how they actually gave up their material body, because our material body means that we have, you know, an extension of it, which is our family, our nation, our community, our wife, our children. That's what material body means. It extends, it expands. So they gave up all those conceptions and they gave up all the attachment. And in that way, they left their material body. And Krishna simultaneously gave them the spiritual bodies in which they could just serve Him and only Him purely. So there's an analogy that was used as well in that pastime. And I'll just read it now, actually. So it says that by observing 7 or 8 ripe mangoes on a tree, we can ascertain that all the fruits on the tree are ripe. Then we can pick them all and bring them home, where in due course the sun's rays and other agents will make them fine-looking, fragrant and delicious, fit to be offered to the king for his enjoyment. When the time comes for the king to take his meal, as a discriminating servant can choose those fruits ready to offer him. From the appearance of the fruits, the servant can tell which are ripe in the middle but still raw on the outside, and thus not yet fit for the king. By the application of a special heating process, these remaining fruits will become ripe in 2 or 3 days, and then they too will be ready to offer to the king. Similarly, among the Munichari gopis who took birth in Gokul, those who completely gave up the materiality of their bodies and very early in life achieved purely spiritual bodies were able to remain untouched by any other man. Thus, Yogamaya allowed them to join the Nitya Siddha and other advanced gopis when they went to meet Krishna. Other Munichari gopis still retained some connection with the external material body, but even they, after being parched by the heat of separation from Krishna, gave up their materiality of their bodies and assumed perfectly transcendental bodies, purified of all taint of contact with other men. So basically, we look at this verse and we understand that, you know, Krishna reciprocating with the desire of the living entity will purify and remove all aspects of the self which are pertaining to the material body. So he will cut down the attachments, the desires, even the residue of desires or the unmanifested desires. Krishna will remove that. And this analogy, it struck me very much, because it makes us see that just with the process of time and having that understanding that we have to be patient in the practice of devotional service, if we follow the process as given by the acharyas, and if we have firm faith in what they've given us, then gradually we will come to that stage of perfection. Because the analogy says here, you know, you have the mango, and you know that with time the mango will become ripe. There's no doubt about it. But it's going to take time. So here it says, you know, before you know, the mango becomes ripe, you know, it's taken care of and certain processes are given for it to become ripe. So in the process of devotional service, you know, we're still very, you know, still coming out of the waters of material nature, still coming out of our enjoying and completely plundering, you know, the body and the senses. Sense enjoyment, basically, that's what we're coming out of, I know for myself. So it takes time to actually break those habits. But by applying the process, and Krishna, when you come to the process of devotional service, Krishna will send the agents and He will send the tools and equipment that we need to get purified so that we can become offered to Krishna via the medium of the spiritual master. And that is why the role of the spiritual master is very obvious. He's a direct expansion of the super soul. So he's Krishna's representative, and he knows, as being an expert psychologist, as the spiritual master is explained in the 4th canto, that the spiritual master knows where the disciple is at. Therefore, he acts accordingly. And that, of course, is coming from Krishna, because Krishna is seated in the heart. He's not inactive. Krishna is very active. Therefore, he churns our hearts and he does certain things in our lives so that we can let go of our concocted ideas about who we are and who he is. So the spiritual master, in this sense, he's the one who actually offers us to Krishna, because he can see that we have stuck to the process, we've been purified. And in that way, when we attain that point of perfection, when we attain our original position, which is Krishna's reciprocation depending on our intense desire, then the modes of material nature cannot touch us at all. So it's a very, this pastime actually, it's, I would recommend, you know, this purport of Krishna meeting the gopis in text 11 of chapter 29 in canto 10. It's a very wonderful purport describing actually how the process of devotional service eventually leads us to taking shelter of Krishna and completely annihilates the material body, all our attachments to this world, and not only on the surface but from the root level. So complete annihilation of the false ego, which is what keeps us here. So there's a nice, in the 25th chapter as well, there's a verse that's explaining how a living entity So the text reads, O gentle Uddhava, all these different phases of conditioned life arise from work born of the three modes of material nature. The living entity who conquers these modes manifested from the mind can dedicate himself to me by the process of devotional service and attain pure love for me. So the chapter, of course, of the title is the three modes and beyond. So we're trying to go beyond the modes of material nature. So the only way to do that is to actually go under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So according to one's level of devotional service, to that degree, the transcendental aspect of one's body becomes prominent and the material aspects diminish. This transformation is described in the following verse from the Bhagavatam as well. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord and detachment from other things, these three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that pleasure, nourishment and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. So reawakening that love we have for Krishna, experiencing the Lord daily in our lives, and at the same time becoming detached from the material activities, becoming detached from the body, all these three happen simultaneously when one comes to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So it's very amazing. So also on this point about how the body of a devotee transcends the modes of material nature. In the same purport, it states that when devotees begin prosecuting devotional service in accordance with the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, they engage their ears and other senses in pure devotion by hearing of the Lord, chanting his glories, remembering him, offering obeisances to him, giving him personal attendance, and so forth. Thus the devotees make the Lord's transcendental qualities the object of their senses, as stated by the Lord himself, Nirguna Mad Apashraya. In this way, the devotee's bodies transcend the material modes. Yet sometimes the devotee may take as their sense objects mundane selves and so on, and that is material. Thus, the devotee's body can have two aspects, transcendental and material. So that's a very important point. Sometimes we may think, oh, why is this pure devotee having a cold? Or why is he sick? Or why does this happen? He's supposed to be pure. How could Prabhupada become sick? All these different things. But we're given information here that, you know, the body of the devotee does transcend the most material nature, but sometimes there's still that aspect of being, you know, because we're being subjected to material styles, we're being subjected to material qualities, sometimes we show those two aspects of the transcendental body and the material body. We can see, I know certain people who are sleeping for 2 hours and they're preaching intensely, and we can see that they're obviously not being bogged down by the modes of material nature. They can see how they've transcended these different modes of material nature because they're so focused on preaching. But sometimes we can see that the Lord even takes with the body that you have, you're able to how do I say this? With the example of Dhruva Maharaj, explained how, you know, Dhruva Maharaj gave up his materiality and became purely spiritual just immediately. So it's not that there's this whole process of you'll only become pure at the end of your life, or you'll only become pure, you know, just before the point of death. It can happen immediately. And that is what Srila Prabhupada would always tell us as well. Srila Prabhupada would always preach that you become Krishna conscious now. You become a Paramahamsa now and transcend the modes of material nature. Be able to extract the nectar. We're in the material world, and that means we have the baggage of having a material body and all the good things that come with it. But at the same time, we should know how to extract ourselves out of that situation. And the most intelligent way to do that, of course, is by surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Lord. And as explained, how Krishna's feet have different markings, we'll become protected because Krishna will take away, you know, our disturbed mind. Krishna will increase our greed for Him. Krishna will get rid of and annihilate our false ego by destroying the enemies of the mind, which is what attaches us to the extension of the body, family, wife, children, society, nation, all these different things. They keep binding us. But once we actually understand what Krishna is offering in the process of surrender, then we become completely fearless. And this is a certain aspect you see with pure devotees. They become fearless because they know what Krishna is offering. They know what Krishna promises when He says, I will protect you. Do not fear. If you just think about me, I will take you home and you won't have to come back and take birth again. You will go back to my eternal abode. So the pure devotee does not get influenced by any of these inferior energies, the fire, the sun, or they don't get affected by them because they're completely under the shelter of Krishna's yoga maya potency. So Hare Krishna, I'll stop here. There's 30 seconds left if anyone wants to comment or ask a question. Surya,
Gopal. Say that a mystic yogi, mm-hmm. if he's unsuccessful in his attempt in this birth,
yeah.
what will happen to the next birth? And will he again start from where he is in his next birth?
Well, mystic,
unlike a devotee.
Well, mystic yogis explain how, you know, they may become elevated to a certain degree, and if they don't attain perfection, they come back down and they, you know, they become extremely humanitarian. Like, they'll open up hospitals, they'll open up schools, they'll become very giving, very kind of like you're compassionate, doing very altruistic work. They can possibly, but there's no, to my understanding, with the devotees, I mean, the process of devotional service is completely on the transcendental platform. So whatever you do, you start from there. You don't lose it out. But with mystic yoga, because it's still within the material, that's That's basically what you're doing, is you're manipulating gross and subtle matter. So it's not completely pure. So that means, okay, you become elevated to higher planets, but then when all of that is finished, when you've exhausted all of that, start from scratch. So you work hard, but at the end, your bank account is a bit dry. Yeah, quick.
Mahatma.
Or Mahamantra. Yes.
So you can speak his name all the time?
Yeah, all the time.
Mum always used to say you can't say anything, don't say anything at all. If you got his attention, what would you ask?
If you got his attention.
Tongue is really hard to control.
That is why we engage the tongue. Actually, the tongue is explained as being one of the most ferocious senses, because you can kill someone with your words.
Sorry, if you haven't got anything good to say, then just say something like that.
How sorry, what was?
If you haven't got anything good to say, then you should say something like that.
Yeah, why repeat something else when you can chant Hare Krishna? So basically, to control your tongue by engaging in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you are controlling the tongue. And the other aspect of it is you hear topics about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the glories of chanting this mantra. At the same time, you converse with others. As you've come here this morning, you come to here, and then you automatically repeat what you heard instead of garbage in, garbage out. So you hear Krishna, you speak about Krishna. And you also eat foodstuffs that are offered to Krishna. That's also controlling the tongue. Yeah? Hare Krishna. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Which aristocracy? Those who fall after a short practice and those who fall after a long practice,
yes.
Right? Thank you. Hare Krishna, Grand Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.